know why cannibals don't eat clowns? Because they taste funny. Ba-da-boom. That's one of the jokes in the book, The Importance of Being Funny, Why We Need More Jokes in Our Lives. Do you have another? Do you have a better one? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We are going to talk about the importance of humor in our lives, the importance of jokes and being funny. And we wonder how important is it to you? With so many disasters and potential disasters going on in the world, from hurricanes to North Korea, do you still find time to laugh? Do you seek out humor when times are stressful? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Let me welcome our guests. I'm very happy to welcome back Al Genie, a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University in Chicago. He is also the author of the new book, The Importance of Being Funny, Why We Need More Jokes in Our Lives. Good morning.
Good morning. A pleasure to be back with you again.
It's good to have you back. The importance of being funny, that's a play on the importance of being earnest?
Yes, it is a play on the importance of being earnest, and it's a wonderful takeoff on that. When you think about it, in the play, Oscar Wilde talks about the importance of being earnest, but all the characters in the play are not earnest at all. They're liars, they're faking, they're poseurs, and not really being the kind of showing up the kind of integrity he's talking about. But the importance of being funny, I literally mean it. And years ago, you interviewed me in a book on the importance of being lazy.
Right.
I meant that, too. That is, I think we need to take time off and time away from our lives. And I think we need to step back in our lives because there are so many questions that are unavoidable and unresolvable and unanswerable and incomprehensible in our lives, but they still confront us. And I think if we look too long into that mist, you know, trying to figure that out, it's despair. And I think we don't get anywhere. And even as someone who's been trained in philosophy, after a while there's a paucity of possibilities. And so I think we have to laugh with it and laugh at it in order to both save ourselves and possibly get a new perspective on the problem in front of us.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about the history of humor and more, but when there are, you know, as I mentioned, so many horrible things going on,
yeah,
it being funny is even more important because it's a safety valve, you say?
I think it is a safety valve. I think, in fact, when we look at the headlines in a given day, you know, that we're now going to, DACA kids will be deported, and the possibility of a hydrogen bomb going off in Korea, and the growing question across the nation of urban violence and racial violence and the diminishment of the American dream. Is there a rational answer to that? As someone who's been trained in the arts and sciences, we're supposed to apply reason, but reason doesn't always exist in these kinds of equations. And I think we have to, as Mel Brooks said, we need humor to give us a different edge, to look at it a different way, to step back from it a while, perhaps even a moment of leisure and laughter so that we could return to it in a new way. I think leisure is a way we cope with life. It's not always an answer to life. It's not always even an anesthesia that we always want to apply to life, but it is another way of looking at it. Nietzsche, by the way, who is not a funny guy, Joe, not a funny guy at all, you know. He said, we have art in order not to die of truth. I take that art to be we have humor in order not to die of truth.
Yeah, so besides being a kind of a coping mechanism, why do we need more jokes in our lives?
Well, you know, the question is why do we need more jokes in life? It's like, why do we need better food in our lives? Because I think it adds to the quality of our life. Mm-hmm. I think it adds to mirth. I think we need to laugh. I'm not a psychologist, but all the psychological studies I've read in laughter is it's a venting mechanism. It gives us greater oxygen. It therefore lets us think a little better. I think laughter is a natural part of the human condition. We're not just ratio animals, rational animals. We're also animals that need joy. I've just come back from Africa, and I spent a lot of time with the silverback gorillas in Rwanda, a wonderful experience, and we sent the photos around. By the way, I pointed out to all my relatives, I'm the taller one wearing the wristwatch. They weren't always sure. But, you know, they laughed.
I did, too.
they really laugh at each other. Dogs laugh. Elephants laugh. Porpoises laugh. We laugh. And I think more than we can laugh, I think we need to laugh. I think Jerry Lewis recently died. By the way, we should do a show on comics and age. Think of Jerry Lewis is 92. Mel Brooks is 90 and still performing.
Oh, yeah.
Kyle Reiner is 95 and still creating. By the way, he has a new special out on HBO, I think it is, or Netflix, I've forgotten. And the title is Read the Obits. If your name's not in it, have breakfast.
That is good. Being funny can make us live longer, it seems.
Being funny, I think so. I really do think so, because it de-stresses the situation. I think humor can detox, not always answer. I think humor is, in the best sense of the word, a temporary anesthetic or analgesic that we apply to ourselves. It isn't always enough, but sometimes just that pause of laughter gives us a moment to breathe and think about perhaps there's another alternative here. What do you do when the kid spills the milk 5 times? Beat them to death? I hope not. Say, well, life is messy. You seem to be a slob. And you go from there.
You know, I was just thinking, I had to ask when I asked listeners, hey, share a joke with us. I did have to say, share a joke that will be okay to say on the radio.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to be careful with humor sometimes, right?
Absolutely. And I think that everybody knows that. I mean, you don't tell a sex joke to mom. It's just not appropriate. And I think that there's a couple rules in telling a joke. Mm-hmm. What's the joke? Who's telling a joke? Who's the joke about? And who's the audience? And I think that those are really critical ingredients in how you work. And the person you call a bore at a party, or the correct definition of a buffoon, is someone who never stops being excessively humorous or really pushy and pushes the boundary. You know how uncomfortable you get? I go to a lot of comedy clubs. It's my work, you know. It's wonderful work, by the way. But when you see the younger people sometimes, when that joke dies, either the scatology rises, the swearing rises, or the sexuality rises. They're trying to get the audience back. And that isn't always the way to do it. I think humor is about, like good manners, is appropriate to the moment. And if there's, you know, the 3 rules of real estate, don't you, Joy?
Location, location, location.
And the 3 rules of comedy are audience, audience, audience.
Ah. So you're saying that it's okay to tell a dirty joke if your audience is appropriate and wants to hear a dirty joke?
Shall we be very careful in this? Shall we step lightly in this? Yes. The long answer is yes. But again, a dirty joke need not be an unethical joke. And I have to also argue that many jokes that are unethical, misogynistic, anti-feminist, racial, and just absolutely damnable, can be funny in their structure, but not necessarily ethical. That is, in 1938, a Nazi comic could have gotten up there and told 10 anti-Jewish, anti-Gypsy, anti-Polish jokes, and brought the audience down. Were those jokes ethical? I want to argue no. In fact, I would argue even when the joke is funny and the audience says it's okay, because we're Nazis and we like those jokes, that joke probably shouldn't be told. But remember, we give comics so much license to push the envelope, to explore. That's what satirists do. They really push the envelope. But there are license with limits, and I think there's been a recent, incredibly appropriate example and Kathy Griffin in the, holding up the head of a dummy head of President Trump. President Trump, whatever your political predilections, whatever your, feelings about him as a person and as a president, is a lightning rod for satirists. As John Stewart said, the year he retired from the show. Why am I quitting now? He's running for office. There's a chance he could win. I've got material forever here.
Yeah.
I mean, he just, his brand, his persona, his demeanor just engenders kind of a comic comet.
Yeah.
That, well, you know, but that doesn't mean you could say anything about him at all. And when Kathy Griffin did that, that was a bridge too far. That was inappropriate. And that may have ruined his career.
Sounds like it did. Paul from Eau Claire emailed, and he said, I've noticed lately that social media has been policing humor if it is too edgy. An important part of humor is making fun of taboo topics, isn't it?
I think that's absolutely the case. And I think that what humor does is often make us comfortable with taboo topics so we can examine it later in a more serious way. I think that's absolutely true. I think the scatology that Howard Stern or Lenny Bruce did, maybe that was too rough and too raw. But Lenny Bruce brought to the fact, and so did George Carlin, what's wrong with these seven words that we supposedly can't use? I mean, they don't cause war. They don't kill anybody. You may not like them, but they're just words. And although I still want to suggest that we can't use certain words like that, even on NPR channels, it did change our understanding of language, didn't it? I mean, it put a new twist on it. And so I think that comics are also teachers. I think that comics should also, and not all of them are intending to do that. A lot of them are doing it as a job. A lot of them are doing it simply as an ego gratification. But a lot of them are doing it for artistic reasons, but in contained in that is stretching the imagination and stretching the limits of acceptability and what's appropriate discussion.
Our guest is Al Genie. He's a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago. He's the author of many books. His latest is The Importance of Being Funny, Why We Need More Jokes in Our Lives. We're inviting you to share a joke. One, again, that we can hear on the radio, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. Or if you have a question or a thought about the philosophical, sociological, and political implications behind humor. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about why we need more jokes in our lives with Al Genie, who is the author of the new book, The Importance of Being Funny. We're welcoming questions and jokes for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Before we go to the phones, and I can't wait to hear some of these jokes, let's talk just a bit about the history of humor. You do have a brief history of humor in the book. Do we know what the first joke was, or what might have been the first joke?
Well, you know, it depends on who you're talking to, of course. But we know that the Egyptians, for example, had a hieroglyphic, 2900 BC, for laughter or laughing. But according to lots of scholars from very different places, that the first joke may have been in the Bible when Genesis, when Abraham and Sarah are visited by an angel who happens to be God, and said that Sarah's with child, and Sarah begins to laugh. She says, "What are you talking about? You know, I'm an old woman. I'm beyond fertility. I'm beyond my cycle. It's gone, and my old man couldn't possibly perhaps fulfill that function," and she begins to laugh. And the Lord says, "You're laughing at me." He says, no, I'm really not, Lord. And he says, "The Lord can do anything," et cetera, et cetera. And it's taken to be the first, not only the first joke, perhaps the first dirty joke.
It sounds,
you know,
like
it depends how you look at it. And because she's hysterical. Yeah, you're God, right? I get it. And now I'm going to have a baby at 90. Well, they do produce a child, Isaac. And by the way, the word Isaac is deprived. That's a nice Freudian slip. There's a joke right there, derived from the Hebrew word meaning laughter. You know, and so jokes have been around forever. I mean, that's absolutely the case. I've been studying humor, for about 30 years. And the question I should answer, even though you haven't asked, is why do I do this? And I think that, you know, as a student of philosophy, I've tried very hard to apply reason in a world that isn't always rational. And when reason runs out, what do? Despair? And I think that in telling a joke about not only the mysteries of life, you know, what is the purpose of death, and so on and so forth, but what about sex and marriage and children and money and illness and, yes, death and religion and God? Isn't this the stuff of comics? Isn't this what they make fun of? Not to give us an answer, but to detox it from us. Yes, last night, I'll give you a little homework tonight, okay, Joe?
Okay.
Mark Maron on Netflix has a new thing out. And he gets out there, and he gets on stage all by himself, and Mark Maron could be a bit too much. But he says that he talks about dying. He says, you know, I'm 53 now, and I've had a couple wives, and I own a house, and I'm just starting to think of the other things, like, how much time do I have left? And I realize that's my great escape. So when my girlfriend says I want to go see this bad film, I say, I don't have that much time left. I don't want to bother. And he goes through this whole routine about how you could use that. He says, and so I'm not so much afraid of death because I could use it to make a better life. He does this wonderful shtick. It's a long monologue on this. And I think, did he give an answer to death? Did he get an answer to a quality of life? No, but he gave us pause to refresh ourselves on that topic.
Well, thanks for the homework assignment. And I was going to ask, I'm glad you answered the question. You do use humor in your classes, too, because kids will actually pay attention to what you're saying.
Well, Joyce, you know, you have an audience that wants to turn you on in the morning, wants to listen to you. I teach required courses and have been doing that for about four decades. I've been teaching courses to the unwilling and the uninterested initially. And to get them in, I've been forced to use humor. I'm not a stand-up comic, but I will revert. If I've lost a class, I'll say, pause. Do you guys hear the one about, and their ears pick up, you know, and I tell a story, and they laugh. Okay, now that I have your attention, can we go back to this? But also, I try to define the course within, you know, parameters of humor. And I think I try to use jokes as entertainment in order to train them. So I think of myself as an entertainer. That is, not train them in that sense, but I mean to educate them. If you could get somebody laughing, I think, by the way, laughter is a sign of wisdom. I think being able to get a joke means you're pretty smart. Right? And I think that in cueing their intelligence, perhaps I can get into them to teach them a little better.
We have a lot of wise listeners waiting to talk with us. Dorothy in Hayward is with us. And Dorothy, I understand you got a joke for us.
Yes. I don't know if it's my setup here, Joy, but I can barely hear you.
Well, go ahead, Dorothy. We can hear you.
Okay. In 1973, I wrote my master's thesis on the function of humor in Eudora Welty's short stories.
Oh.
And it agrees with what your guest said just all the way. And it was 120 pages. But when I learned more about humor, I think, when my husband and I moved up here to Hayward, northwestern Wisconsin. And our name is Lund, and he kind of got back into his roots and learned the Scandinavian way of laughing.
Yeah.
Laughing at themselves.
Yeah.
So I'll tell the joke.
Okay.
And I'll have to take both parts because my husband has passed away.
Okay.
Little Ollie came running into the house. Oh, Mama, Mama, oh, Mama. And Mama Lena says, oh, what's wrong, little Ollie? What's wrong? It's my Papa dropped a dime down the outhouse hole. A dime? Well, times is hard, but it's all right. We'll get by. Everything's going to be all right, little Ollie. But, Mama, Danny threw his wallet and his watch down there, too. His wallet and his watch. Good heavens, why did he do that? He said he's not going to go down there just for a measly dime.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm sorry. I love Lena and Ollie jokes. They're the best. And Garrison Keillor says, it's not because they're simpletons. It's because they're simple people.
Right.
And they're retaining that.
Because of those jokes.
And they're wonderful. The one I love the most is, Ole is dying, and he says, "Is my wife here?" And Lena says, "Yeah, I'm here." He says, "That's good." This is my children here. He says, "Yeah, Papa, we're all here." He says, "That's good." Are the neighbors here? "Yeah, the neighbors are here." He says, "That's good. So tell me, how come the light is still on in the kitchen?" I mean, these things go on and on and on. And they're wonderful jokes. These are folk jokes to make life better for those folks.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. Let's go next to Daryl in Couderay. Hi, Daryl.
Hi, Joy. I've got a comment, and then I wrote a joke also.
Okay.
Okay. My comment is, I think you have to laugh to keep your sanity. It's as though the world has become so obtuse, so violent, so odd, that humor is the only mirror we can rely on to view part of the truth, so we can survive for another day. I think the comedians must be our earth angels.
Oh, well, before you and Al, is that kind of you have to laugh to keep your sanity?
Yes, I think so, and I want to be careful in saying this, but I think a lot of comics are the new priestly class that keeps us sane. I think comics, remember, there's a whole tradition of the courts of Europe of jesters and court clowns, and they'd be able to speak truth to power. That tradition, I think, is maintained by comics. Think about this. There's been a revolution in comedy, starting with Bill Maher and The Daily Show. Those two shows have spawned a whole new industry of satire and a way of looking at political theory and political comedy. Yes, Saturday Night Live started 40 years ago, and they have a long tradition. Yes, the Jay Lenos of the world and Letterman and Johnny Carson did it. But now those shows are directed towards and only towards politics. And by the way, about 29% of our population, that's their main source of political information as well as humor. So I think that they're the new priestly class. And I say that in a large, small p, in large quotes around it, priestly mm-hmm. class.
All right, Daryl, what's your joke?
Okay. After life, you have to be thankful for the rest of death.
Is that a joke?
Emphasis on rest.
Okay. What if you don't get a joke, Al? Does that mean you're dense?
You know, no. There are two things here. I don't know Daryl's background, but that means that we don't share the same cultural standards very often. That is, if I'm a Mormon and I tell a really funny Mormon joke to a couple of Catholics, they could be scratching their heads. I think the one thing about jokes to make it work is, as Ted Cohn pointed out at the University of Chicago, you have to have certain cultural markers to make it work. Otherwise, they don't. Again, audience, you know. Every joke isn't funny to every audience. And so I think that that's really important. I didn't quite get it. That didn't mean it wasn't funny.
Right.
There could be 20 people out in the audience right now just holding their sides in.
Right.
But when a joke doesn't work or you have to diagram it, guess what? It's not a joke to you.
Yeah. Thank you, Daryl, very much. Bill in Chippewa Falls is with us. Hi, Bill.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm enjoying just greatly, and I wish I...
Hey, Bill, you know what? You're pushing buttons on your phone, and we can't hear you.
Uh-oh.
All right, so now talk without pushing buttons on your phone.
I don't know if that was me. It could be.
You're the only line on there, Bill. So I'm going to... Maybe you have somebody... Maybe you have an extension, and somebody's trying to call someone while you're trying to talk to us. So I'm going to put you on hold. You can see if your wife is trying to make a phone call. And I'm going to go to... I'm going to go to another caller, Molly in Green Bay. Hi, Molly.
Good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead,
Molly. Good morning.
Molly.
Good morning, Molly. How are you?
I'm just fine. I'm happy to be with you.
Tell your joke, Molly.
Tell my joke. Okay. There once was a woman who woke up one morning, and she looked in the mirror, and she saw that she only had 4 hairs on her head. "Oh, well," she said, "I think I'll braid my hair today." So she did, and she had a wonderful day. The next day, she wakes up and has the same thing, only now she only has 3 hair on her head. She said, "I think I'll part my hair down the middle." And then she let it breed again, and she said, oh, this is just a grandy. The next day, she looked in the mirror and noticed that she only had one hair left on her head. Well, she said, today, I'll just put my hair in a ponytail. She did, and she had a fun, fun day. Well, the next day she woke up, looked in the mirror, saw that she had not a single hair on her head. Oh, she said, yay, I don't have to fix my hair today. Attitude is everything.
There you go. All right, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Molly.
I'm sorry.
Bye-bye. Yeah.
I have to tell you, one of the parts of the book I talk about comics on stage and how jokes work and don't work. And you know, in the old days, I think the modern comics are, by the way, much more clever, much more writers than the old comics. You know, the Jerry Lewis's of the world, the Milton Berle's of the world, the Bob Hope's, they had joke writers. And they had jokes, and then they worked the jokes, and then they did shows, and they practiced it, and they did it. And I call that show business. They went from joke to the boom, but a boom, but a boom, but a boom, but a boom. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Make sure you tip your waiter. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Now they get up, and they're doing observational stuff, but it's still a setup, a pause, and a punchline. There's still jokes inside that observation. But these guys write these jokes about life issues. And I think what she was telling you, this life issue one, but it's got to fit. You know, as I said to you, jokes that fail because as much on the audience's point of view as the comic's point of view. The comic can get up there and tell a joke that's working 10 audiences. He or she tells that joke, nothing. Yeah. Tells it another one close to it, nothing. The only thing they hear is the ice clinking in the glass of nervousness, et cetera, et cetera. Bombing is, I think, the... Not the ultimate end of a comic's life, the regular phenomenon of a comic's life. It depends, again, on the joke teller, and the audience.
Yeah. Jeannie from Fountain City wants to know if there is a trick to being funny. You do have some tips on telling jokes, and you touched on it a little bit there.
Yeah, yeah. I do think, listen, this is my little schemata. First of all, it is about the teller. I think every joke, whether at a dinner party to your grandkids, and by the way, I love telling jokes to my grandchildren. Mm-hmm. You know, it's our little bonding principle. And my grandson told me one yesterday, and he said, you know, Grandpa, the internet went down yesterday, and I talked to my folks for about 10 minutes. They're really kind of nice. Oh, come on. He did that on his own, right? It's the teller. I mean, do you have skills? Can you do an accent? You know, do you know how to tell a story? The tale itself, the joke's got to be good. The joke's just got to be good. The timing, two things on timing. What's your time? What's your meter? You know, boom, 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 boom. Also, the timing of a joke. I still don't tell 911 jokes.
No.
You know, I just came back from Rwanda. I would never tell a joke about that genocide that happened there. Now, time can pass. Mel Brooks has made a fortune out of making fun of Hitler, you know, making fun of the war. Think about the great, Monty Python. They made fun of the life of Jesus and the life of Brian, et cetera, et cetera. So timing is really important. When is it okay to tell a joke? Remember that comic, Godfrey Cambridge, forgive me.
I can see his face, but...
You know, the guy who did the Affleck commercials.
Yeah.
He did some jokes on the tsunami right after the tsunami. Well, they fired him. You know, it was inappropriate. And then finally the told. Who's your audience? Is your audience going to be receptive? You know, are you pitching it to the right audience? And I think that's really important. Here's maybe an example of this. I think the way to kill literature in high school students is to assign Moby Dick.
Why?
That's how you kill them. They're never going to read a novel again. It's too long.
Yes.
And as Hemingway said, Melville said too much about that whale, right?
Right.
It's unbearable. So who are the told? So I think there are little rules, and you have to be careful. Just as I said, the simple rule. Do you tell a really naughty joke to your mother or your grandmother? Probably not. It's inappropriate. Your friends could be hysterical about it. So I think all those rules do apply.
Yeah. I always forget the punchline, so I'm terrible.
That's right. And people do, by the way, isn't that horrible? Sometimes they go, they give the setup, they give the middle, and they go, I forgot the punchline. You want to reach across the table and choke them.
Why did the chicken cross the road?
Oh, the one in Latin, it's because they wanted to see if the transit was acceptable and the chariots were there, but I can't do it quite.
Yeah. Was that a joke that the first chicken crossing?
Well, come on, Joy, tongue in cheek. It's a book on humor. It wasn't exactly correct, but the first jokes there, kind of creative. We don't know. We think, again, that joke from Isaac. But supposedly one of the Greek comics said, a group of the tribe walked into a Greek bar and they bought it. Boom. I mean, it doesn't make any sense, but it's an attempt to be humorous about humor.
Well, this particular chicken wanted to get to a place where they didn't question her motivation.
There you go. Yeah, very good.
Bill in Chippewa Falls is with us. Hi, Bill.
Good morning. I'm sorry about the problem.
Oh, that's okay. You're back. That's right. Okay, so you had a good joke for us?
Well, I've got a new one. I hope it'll go off, but I've been on hold so long that I'm not in Chippewa anymore. I'm in Menominee.
Well, all right. You made it. So you also had a point to make about
No, I had a point, yes. That humor is funny, and it must have a bit of truth to it.
Yeah.
And it to add to that, it can be, if it's self-deprecating, it can work in so many places. And the example is, for me especially, is how many men does it take to change a light bulb? Hmm. And the answer to that is just one, but it takes 3 trips to the hardware store.
Very good.
Yeah, so that's not, so it has to be slightly self-deprecating, do you think, Al?
Yeah, it does, and it has, again, pitch to the audience. How many librarians does it take to change the light bulb? 4, 1 to screw it in, and 3 to write up a report and journal how the rest of the audience felt about it. You know, it goes on and on and on. Or how many Unitarians does it take to screw in a light bulb? And it's a speech by a minister saying, if you appreciate luminosity, we will be having a lighting ceremony at the church on Sunday where you could do your interpretive dance to explain why light is important to you. They go on and on and on. Or my favorite ones, I love ethnic jokes, good ethnic jokes, not jokes that are demeaning or disgusting, but rather ethnic jokes that show up that were all common. For example, you know the difference between a Jewish a mother and an Italian mother?
Black dress?
Not bad. Sometimes black nylons, but actually nothing. Think about that. So how many Jewish mothers does it take to screw in a light bulb? Because I'm Jewish and Italian, I can get away with it.
Okay.
That's all right, honey. Leave me alone. I'll just sit here in the dock. Don't worry about me. Those are wonderful. Or for my, what's the difference between an Italian mother and a pit bulldog?
What?
I got you laughing. Good.
Yeah, my dad is Italian, by the way.
So the difference between an Italian mother and a pit bulldog is sooner or later the bulldog lets go. But when you do those, are jokes about any mothers. Put Polish mother into that.
Yeah, that's true.
Here's my favorite mother joke. Now, you insert the ethnicity of your choice in this, right? But this does work. I think this does work. I like it in a little bit of a Jewish accent. The son calls up the mother in Florida, says, Mom, how are you? She says, I'm terrible. I'm just terrible. Mom, what's wrong? I've been sick for 28 days. Mom, you've been sick for 28 days. Why? I haven't had anything to eat or nothing for 28 days. Mom, why haven't you had anything to eat in 28 days? And she pauses and says, because in the chance you should finally call, I didn't want to have food in my mouth.
Or I've been waiting for you to call.
Right. I mean, come on. Look at a Polish mother, an Irish mother, an Italian mother. And I think good ethnic jokes tell us about ourselves. Because moms are moms. Dads are peculiarities of time and place. But But there's this commonality in us, and I think it shows up our really good side. The bad ethnic jokes, whew.
Yeah, you don't want to.
I think they border on hate speech and real animosity, et cetera, et cetera. But the good ethnic jokes say, what are we doing here? There was a comic when I was a young boy, because I'm not a young man anymore. Besides Henny Youngman, whom I really, really love. And now I'm blanking on his name, forgive me. He got up on stage and either did Myron Cohen. He just went from one joke to another in a Yiddish accent and an Italian accent. In a Yiddish accent and an Italian accent. And he says, you're probably wondering, I'm doing this because tell me what the difference is. You know, it was wonderful. He just told little stories that were not at all offensive. Now, I'm going to say this very carefully. The next person in line in that was the no longer acceptable Bill Cosby. But think what Bill Cosby did. He was a black man that told stories that we all related to. That great show of his, that show when he's the doctor and the wife is the lawyer and they have those five kids. Was that a show about black America? That was a show about families. In fact, the critique in black America was, how many black families, look like that? But they were stories about human beings. And I think that's what comedy is about. And I think our really good comics are really our Claxtons, our watchtowers, our warning bells that tell us a great deal about ourselves.
We need to take a break, and then when we come back, we will take more of your jokes and your questions and observations for Al Jeaney, who is the author of The Importance of Being Funny, Why We Need More Jokes in Our Lives, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Speaking of hurricanes, Hurricane Harvey, Hurricane Irma now, lots of disasters, potential disasters in the news. And we are wondering if you, with all this going on, still find time to laugh. How important is humor to you in times like this? We are talking with a guest who says we do need more jokes in our lives. He is Al Jeaney, author of The Importance of Being Funny. Joke-telling and jokes can serve as a safety valve for dealing with reality. And we are talking about humor, analyzing jokes, talking about the various philosophical, sociological, and political implications around humor. And boy, we have so many calls. I wanted to share, though, Crystal on Facebook, as we were talking about mom jokes just before break. She says, I love dad jokes, dad jokes. I think they are so funny. What happens when a frog parks illegally? He gets towed.
Oh! Boom, 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 boom. I'm working the room all week. Ladies and gentlemen, please tip your servant.
Another one is, how do you find Will Smith in a snowstorm?
Oh, careful now.
Yeah. Look for the Fresh Prince.
Oh, boy, I didn't see that coming.
I did not either.
I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, that's funny. They actually are a new category, or I don't know how new it is, but I've heard about that, is the bad dad jokes. That's what, tell bad jokes.
I wish I could do that.
Yeah.
And I think that, just if I could add something because we're having too much fun here, we have to, come on, get a little more serious.
Get serious, yeah.
I do think there are three goals and benefits of humor. First of all, let's not deny it. It's pleasure and delight. We love to laugh. We want to laugh. There's joy in laughter. There's really an endocrine rush in laughter, we know physiologically, right? There's that. And then I think jokes are a development of relationships. You haven't asked, and I'm kind of surprised, how did I get into it? And it was my Uncle Joe. Every time my Uncle Joe saw me, until the week before he died, when he gave me the embrazo, as he pulled me into him to give me a kiss, he'd whisper in my ear, did you hear the one about?
Yeah.
And he told me a joke. I'm serious. Did he repeat himself every once in a while, but not in a regular pattern. And somewhere when I was a teenager, I said, what do you do that for? Stop it. It's kind of creepy. Why do you do that? And he said to me, it loses something in English because it was all in Italian. says, because I love you, stupido. If I didn't love you, why would I make you want to make you laugh? Why would I give you the gift and the weapon of joke and humor?
Yeah.
And I've always remembered that, that it's a way. And so for me, a joke is a mitzvah, a gift, a gift to someone else. You know, and no, you don't want to be the buffoon that walks into the party and says, hey, have you heard the one about? But when I see someone, right away, I'm telling them a joke like Uncle Joe. Why? Because I want to tell them, I'm glad to see you. I want to make you laugh. I've heard this joke before, but you haven't, so on and so forth. And last, let's not forget, it is this defense mechanism. I think laughter is another form of wisdom. I think that when all else fails, you need to laugh. And here's the proof. Jokes, even the most horrible times, can be a way of dealing with reality and a way of denying reality and a way of asserting your independence. Even in the concentration camps, the great Viktor Frankl and Eugene Levy, not the comic Levy, chronicled some of the jokes that inmates told to each other to mitigate the horror of the camps. And the one that was so famous was two of the inmates were thrown into a cell and they were told they were going to be hung, shot in the morning.
Oh.
And in the middle of the night, the guard came to them, we've changed our minds, we're going to hang you. And the one inmate turns to the other inmate and says, ooh, they must be losing the war. They're running out of bullets.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, you would never tell that joke on stage.
No.
But, you know, to a Holocaust survivor, to them at the moment, it was a spit in the face of those who were going to kill them. Humor as a weapon, a sword and a shield. And I think when correctly used, can be salvific. But that was way too serious. Tell me a joke.
Well, let's see what Mary in Wisconsin Rapids has for us. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Before you were talking about, you know, more or less dirty jokes, things like that.
Mm.
And my cousin, Nancy Hallwick, was just, maybe 3 years older than me. And she said, I have a joke for you. And so I'm like, okay. You know, wondering what it was going to be. And she goes, what's sexy and hums? And I said, I don't know. And she goes, This was early 60s.
Mary, I'm so sorry. I'm dense now, too. Sexy and what? I missed the sex.
Okay, she said, what's sexy and hums?
Oh, and then she hummed.
She
okay, I get it. I didn't hear the word hums. That's what I didn't hear. So that's why I didn't get it.
And, you know, and sex jokes are the most common jokes. You know that. I mean, there are really, this is hard to believe, but I'm an academic and I believe it. There are really people who chronicle sex jokes. I mean, who study, you know, sex jokes. And in a serious way. They're not particularly, you know, interested in the jokes. But clearly every culture has had sex jokes. And Joyce, I'm sorry, I'm going to tell you my favorite sex joke. If you're cut off the air, I can't help it.
Well, you know, let's just make sure it's it's PG-13.
I got it. But I always scare the audience. He says, you know, you want to hear my sex tricks? And they kind of look at me and say, I'm going to tell it to you anyway. Mm-hmm. What the heck? I've got tenure. You can't fire me. So again, because I'm Jewish and Italian, I could use this old man is 95 years old. He's living in the Jewish retirement home, and it's his birthday. And his friends hire a prostitute and send it up to the old man. And she knocks on the door, you know, knock, knock, knock. He says, I'm coming, I'm coming. Knock, knock, knock. He says, I'm coming already. I'm old, hang on. He gets to the door, opens it up. This beautiful woman says, hi, it's your birthday, and my friends have sent me up for super sex. He says, what? He says, it's your birthday, and my friends have sent me up for super sex. He looks at her and he says, well, to tell you the truth, honey, at my age, I'll take the soup. Come on.
That is good. That is good.
You know, I mean, I think that's the funniest sex joke I know.
That is good. I was trying to think if there was one in the book that I thought was, and I'm going to, I can't find it, but I'll paraphrase it, okay. And it won't be done with proper timing, but, and I'm going to paraphrase in PG-13 it a little bit.
Yeah.
It was, you know, so somebody finds a bottle and rubs the bottle, and the genie comes out and says, I will grant you, what is it that you'd like, anything in the world? And the man says, I'd like to have peace in the Middle East. And the genie said, that's impossible. What else do you want? And he said, well, I would like insert sexual fantasy here with my wife. And then the genie said, let's get back to that. What about that? Let's see if we can get that peace in the Middle East.
What exactly do you mean by peace in the Middle East? Correct. And I think those are wonderful jokes without it, right? I mean, you could be. I think we confuse scatology. I hate scatology jokes. Children do that. I don't think they're funny. I'm sorry. I don't think they're funny. But I think sex jokes don't have to be incredibly gross or vulgar. Having said that, have I heard a couple incredibly gross, vulgar sex jokes that are funny? Absolutely. But it's the nuance and it's the presentation. That is just wonderful. Here's one of the funniest jokes I've ever heard, and it's a one-liner from Jerry Seinfeld. He said, you know, I didn't realize my voice had a tone, and then I got married. You know.
And I'm looking at the clock, and I'm looking at so many great jokes. I'm trying to figure out.
I'm so sorry.
No. That's why I was slightly distracted. I want to thank Rich in Rhinelander emailed. Because I am retiring. I announced that I'm retiring at the end of the month. And he says, I'm going to be missing Joy in 24 days. You're retiring. That's no laughing matter. Here's an Italian joke for an Italian-American talk show host who's about to retire. Patient, doctor, I keep hearing voices, but I don't see anyone. The doctor says, when does this happen? The patient says, when I'm on the phone. Ba-dum-bump.
Now, wait a minute. You're retiring?
I am at the end of September.
You know, there's a danger in that. You'll have to, well, I think that's wonderful. Congratulations. Well,
I'm going to be able to do a lot of things and have a lot of fun and go to hang out with the gorillas like you did. And that.
Oh, it's one. This is my 49th year at Loyola University. I don't know if I'm going to stay another 49. We'll see.
Yeah.
You never can be sure. But here's a retirement joke.
Okay.
So I went to see George Burns really at the Aurora Theater here in Chicago, and he was 99 years old, and he walked out on stage. He was all of 5'3" with a cigar that was 4 feet long. He said, now, those of you who had money on the fact that I'd die before I walk out on the stage, you lose. Those of you who put money that I won't make it through the show, you're still on. And he didn't want to retire, he says, if I retire, what am I going to do with the rest of my life?
No, that's right. I'm going to continue to to enjoy life, but just from the other side of the microphone.
I understand. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. And we're going to have to leave it there because we are out of time. Al Genie, thank you so much for being with us. Al Genie is the author of The Importance of Being Funny, Why We Need More Jokes in Our Lives. Thanks to Nyasia Ellison for producing this program. Thank you for all of your jokes. And thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.